Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the AVA Risk Group FY 2021 results conference call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Rob Broomfield, Group Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and welcome to the AVA Risk Group FY 2021 results conference call. Firstly, introducing myself, I'm the AVA Risk Group CEO, Rob Broomfield, and I'll be talking to the FY 2021 results presentation released to the ASX this morning. I'm pleased to also introduce our CFO, Lee Davis, and our Chairman, David Cronin, who will also be contributing. Remind everyone on the call that we'll be responding to questions submitted at the end of the presentation. I know you will all be aware of the recent announcement regarding the divestment of the AVA Services division, and the presentation will be more focused on the post-divestment companies forming the group. Moving to slide two, the agenda for this morning's conference call. Firstly, I'll cover the highlights of our FY 2021 results. Our CFO, Lee Davis, will cover in detail the financial results. Finally, I'll discuss our strategy and the outlook for AVA Technologies before we move to questions. Moving to slide three. AVA Risk Group has incredible global reach. AVA Technology Group, consisting of FFT and BQT, provide access control, electronic locking, and highly scalable and intelligent sensing solutions to protect and optimize critical assets. We have a very significant global install base, including many of the world's best-known security-conscious blue-chip companies, and this large and growing customer and installation base forms one of the foundations for our future growth, especially future recurring revenues. Our solutions are highly valued, from defense through energy and utilities to transport, for their outstanding performance, reliability, and low total cost of ownership, which underpins the high margins AVA Technology enjoys and is a foundation of the current and future market expansion through our expanding go-to-market. As an example of capabilities, our outdoor solutions currently protect critical assets in the Arctic Circle through to the tropics and everywhere in between, including Middle East deserts. As I like to explain, there isn't anywhere on the planet we cannot apply our technologies. Moving to slide four. As I mentioned earlier, I'll focus on the AVA Technologies division, which consists of two highly respected sensing and security technology solution specialists, Future Fibre Technologies, or FFT, and BQT. Both companies have more than 20 years of success in delivering technology and innovation, and they continue to provide world-class solutions. One way of visualizing our solutions is to picture a high-security site with an external perimeter fence protecting the buildings on-site, and each building containing multiple internal secured rooms, including, say, a data network center, which is also networked to other remote high-security sites by fiber optic cables carrying confidential data. We provide the advanced intrusion detection of the perimeter, both on the fence and covert buried, the encrypted card or biometric readers for access control, the electronic security locks that secure all building entry points and internal room access, and even data cabinet access. We also provide advanced and actionable warning of attempted interference of data network cables in the building and between the buildings. We also protect critical services that feed into the facility, including power cable and pipelines. All the technologies are highly scalable and have a wide range of integration capabilities. We take the AVA technology solutions to market through an expanding go-to-market that includes distribution for commercial off-the-shelf products, to fulfillment through security system integrators, and to new partnering and technology licensing models for new applications and markets. Moving to slide five. Many of you will be aware of the evolution of AVA Risk Group, but to recap, after listing in 2015, FFT acquired Maxec Group, which contained BQT and the services startup AVA Global in 2017, creating AVA Risk Group Limited, with a technology division of FFT and BQT and a services division consisting of AVA Global. We've been delivering consistent growth since and moved into consistent profits over the past 2 years. We're really pleased with the crystallization of value resulting from the services division's successful execution of their growth plans and the strong net cash return from the divestment. Importantly, we're also seeing the results over the past 2 years from technology's improvements in operational efficiencies, such as the consolidation of facilities, which is providing operating leverage, high margins, and the capability to execute on future growth initiatives, which will be covered in this presentation. Moving to slide 6. The AVA Risk Group delivered another outstanding year of growth and profit, and further improvements and strengthening of the business, which is achieved in a year with numerous global challenges of which you're all aware. Group revenues were up 41% and EBITDA up an exceptional 116%, which is demonstration of the scalability of both services and technology. The COVID-19 impacts on technology and services did vary in the year, with services receiving some benefit from the air freight restrictions and their ability to be responsive in securing freight capacity, and this increased revenues and margins from the space premium. Technology finished the year with $4.38 million of backlog, with another $1.5 million of short-term delayed contracts expected to close quickly in FY22. I should also highlight the strong cash position at year-end, at $17.3 million, which is after payment of dividends during the year that Lee will cover. In the first quarter of FY22, we're seeing further strong cash receipts, including $1.5 million US in cash from the Industry Ministry of Defence licensing contract alone. It's important to understand the FY21 results were in no way an aberration, and which can be seen as we move to slide 7. The FY21 results were above guidance, and as can be seen from the graph, the results are actually a continuation of the revenue and EBITDA growth achieved since FFT and MACSEC merged in mid-FY18. Significant operational leverage has been achieved since the merger and includes OPEX optimisation, including consolidation of technology operations, and our ability to sustain and grow margins from both the high value and differentiated solutions and the go-to-market innovations such as technology licensing. We've been able to grow EBITDA at a rate faster than headline revenue. I'll now hand over to our CFO, Lee Davis, to cover the financials in more detail as we move to slide 8.
Thank you, Rob. And moving on to slide 9, our group financial summary, I'm pleased to be presenting some great results to everyone this morning. As you can see from this slide, AVA has continued its phenomenal year-on-year growth. As Rob has mentioned earlier, it's by no means a single feat, but rather a continuing trend for our business. And this is despite the challenging COVID-19 trading conditions that everyone is experiencing and what particularly hit our technology division to some extent during the year. Revenues grew year on year by 41% to a record $65 million, and we improved our gross margin returns also from 48% last year to 49% of sales revenues this year. Importantly, we've managed to achieve this growth with just a $1.2 million increase in our operating cost base. That increase you'll see later sits within our services division and relates to the successful profit increase that they've had, and I'll talk to that a bit further later on. So really, this is testament to the highly scalable business operating model that the AVA Group has in both its technology and services division. And this has helped drive the strong growth in profitability, with EBITDA up 116% to a record $16 million. Turning to slide 10, I'll just provide a little bit more detail on our technology division. We've seen that both business divisions, technology and services, have improved year on year. Technology saw a 17% increase in its sales revenues compared to last year. And as I mentioned, that's despite the challenges of COVID-19 travel restrictions, which has limited access to sites and delayed some project deliveries and orders for both FFT and BQT. And we anticipate, as those restrictions loosen, that we'll see recovery in both those businesses. And indeed, we have seen improvement in Q4 last financial year, and that's continuing as we start the current financial year. With reduced travel and a continued focus on cost management, the technology division has actually seen its operating costs decrease by 3% year on year to $10.8 million. Now, along with the increased contribution from the Indian MOD project this year, that's helped lift our operating profits, with an EBITDA margin growing to 34% of sales compared to last year's 24%. And so that's $8.3 million in EBITDA profitability for the business. Turning to slide 11, I'll now talk to the services division results. Our global Dave Logistics operations continue to experience their great year-on-year growth. Revenues were up 61% compared to the prior year, helped along by industry consolidation, which fueled improved gross margins, which you'll note is 33% this year compared to 25% of sales last year. The operating expenses, as I mentioned earlier, has increased by $1.5 million, most of which is a reflection of the improved profitability of this business unit, with the management team incentivised by a profit share arrangement that investors are probably aware of from previous ASX announcements. EBITDA has grown to 19% of sales compared to 9% last year at $7.2 million Australian dollars. So this excellent performance has enabled AVA to achieve the recent sale or divestment of the services division for a return that's over 570% of our initial investment. Is a great result for our AVA shareholders. Now, turning to slide 12, as this graph shows, we've continued our strong cash generation last quarter, with operating cash flows achieving record levels. Importantly, this is not purely the result of license fee income from the Indian MOD project, but collections excluding that Indian MOD project are also up 5% on last year. And as you can see from the graph, that itself is a step change in terms of the year prior. We will, of course, continue to focus on our internal cash processes and systems to ensure that we maximise our free cash flow generation from operations as we continue forward. Moving to the next slide, we present our group balance sheet. The group finished the year with a very strong balance sheet. Importantly, we now hold over $17 million in cash reserves, and this leaves us well placed to support future growth of the business, as well as our recently announced plans with respect to capital management, which David will touch on later. So importantly, post-sale of the services division, cash reserve is expected to grow by a further $42 million. We manage our working capital needs carefully, and with similar year-on-year growth in both receivables and payables compared to last year, and a 0.8 million reduction in our inventory levels, we've been able to maintain good balance and management of our working capital requirements. And that's also allowing us to fund our investments in product development to enhance the technologies and maintain our leadership position in the markets in which we compete. Turning now to slide 14 and our group cash flow statement. As I mentioned earlier, we've seen strong operating cash flows. These have increased 195% year on year. And as Rob mentioned in his presentation a moment earlier, even with paying out over $7.1 million in dividends to our shareholders during the year, we've been able to increase our cash reserves by almost $1 million. Turning now to slide 15, I will hand over to our Chairman, David Cronin, to provide you with some comments on our capital management.
Lee. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking the time to join the call this morning, and apologies that the operator had to start the call late because of a previous call the operator had. So capital management has been high on the agenda for AVA at least for the last 3-4 years. You'll all recall that we acquired a business called MaxEc. As part of that business, we acquired BQT Technologies, and we also acquired AVA Global Services. Whilst BQT is generally a CapEx sale and requires some working capital, AVA Global is a very capital-light business, and the main expenses there were really the cost of employees in terms of fixed operating costs. So that business has performed exceptionally well. Chris Fergus and his management team have done a great job building that business over the previous few years into a very profitable and high-growth business, but also one that had reached the scale whereby it was appropriate to sort of look at divestment options. And the board's very pleased that the management team and the company have found a new home for that business, and that because of that, the shareholders of AVA will have, or the company AVA will have, a lot of surplus capital on its balance sheet that we don't need to fund product development, innovation and growth. We will keep some capital on our balance sheet, just under $20 million based on the numbers that you're seeing in the presentation today. But to have the excess capital, the additional 40.2 on the balance sheet, the board and management have determined that that's not necessary to sustain the growth of the business in the technology division. You would have seen that the technology division has gone from strength to strength as well, and the guys have already spoken to that, so I won't labour on those points. But importantly, we are still putting some capital aside to grow out the technology division and keeping a little bit aside for what we're calling an acquisition seed fund. But also importantly, you'll all be aware of our push into recurring revenues. And one of the main areas for recurring revenues that we have on our strategy at the moment is Aura IQ, and that would involve us, where we're selling it on an OPEX basis, to fund the capital equipment costs and then essentially rent those boxes out on a dollar per metre per month sort of basis. So the board's very confident in its capital management strategy and very privileged to be in this position thanks to the very successful divestment of AVA Global. And so what the intention is to return capital to shareholders of about $39.2 million, and conduct an on-market buyback. The buyback, you know, we're going to start with $1 million. It may well be extended depending on the cash position of the company and the success of that buyback. But we have determined that a more efficient method would be the capital return to shareholders. It is subject to shareholder approval, which we hope to put to people at the AGM this year in 28 October. It's also subject to obtaining a favourable class ruling from the ATO. So that sort of wraps up our capital management update, and I trust that shareholders will wait to see the details in the AGM notice of meeting for further particulars. And I'll pass back to Rob Broomfield. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Moving to slide 17 now. The post-divestment AVA Risk Group structure creates a pure-play technology company with very attractive fundamentals that include proven technology platforms and innovation capabilities, a global reach and an exceptional customer base, and underlying operating leverage from the controlled cost base. We operate in a massive global security market with significant near-term and long-term growth opportunities. We also have scalable low-investment expansion opportunities into new markets through partnerships. Finally, we see how global connectivity is both enabling solution innovation and creating increasing demand for our technologies, which I'll touch on shortly. Moving to slide 18. I've already covered a proven track record and given context around scalability of our operating models. Management's been expanding the go-to-market models not just to grow revenues, but to also improve visibility to future revenues through long-term contracts. As mentioned, AuraIQ is clearly a program focused both on innovation and recurring revenues from a SaaS or service as a solution-based model. Another example is BQT's Dorr Macabre and Assa Abloy distribution agreements. Those two companies are the top two locking solution companies in the world. And global agreements will significantly drive up sales through their global reach into many dozens of countries and demand generation from their significant sales and marketing clout. Further, our technology licensing program, as we use for the Indian Ministry of Defence contract, which has delivered over 12 million of revenue to date and with some 2.3 million to be fulfilled, will extend our reach into markets we could not access with our other go-to-markets. And licensing provides near 100% margins, and so it contributes to ongoing high margins. Finally, the global opportunity for AVA technology extends beyond security, and progress has already been made into condition monitoring applications. As global connectivity and fibre rollout continues to rapidly expand, we see significant opportunity through natural extension to be part of the numerous smart city initiatives underway globally, and by any measure, this is both rapidly growing and is sized in the many hundreds of billions of dollars. Moving to slide 19. Smart cities rely on real-time actionable data from sensors distributed throughout the city and beyond. Dark fibre is already deployed extensively under and through cities, along transport infrastructure, along pipelines, along power cables, and this data communication infrastructure can be converted into a massive and extremely sensitive distributed sensor with no real impact on its primary function of carrying large volumes of data. With advanced analytics and machine learning, events detected by the fiber can be classified into either actionable or non-threat events in real time. And even moving objects can be tracked with this technology. For example, you could see speed and density of traffic every few meters along the freeway in real time. You could see the progressive deterioration of road surfaces in real time. You could identify the location of traffic incidents in real time. You could also detect rockfalls under rail lines or other unplanned activity along rail lines and also track the exact position and speed of trains, all in real time. You could identify the movement of manhole covers at the entry to data fibre and power cable ducts. And if you're following the same power cable to where it crosses under a river, you could all see the overhead boat activity, detect boat anchor drops in the proximity of the cable, all in real time. You could also monitor the resonant signals from rotating equipment such as tunnel extraction fans and conveyor rollers to determine rotating speed and identify signature vibrations associated with early stage mechanical failure in real time. The ability to simply convert existing fibre into an extremely sensitive sensor, then integrate the real-time classified events into cloud-based analytics is one of the core building blocks that we believe will form part of the smart cities of the future. I'm pleased to say that FFT technology is capable of doing everything I've just described, including integration of the smart data to control access with BQT access control and smart locking solutions. More importantly, we're actually already doing everything I've described through commercial deployments and proof of concept and value trials. And we're well positioned to deliver on our vision of being a global leader in actionable, intelligent data streams that protect and optimize critical assets. Moving to slide 19. In terms of partnership leverage, as I mentioned earlier, the Assa Abloy and Dorr Macabre relationships in prior years, although growing, was limited to a few countries and was circa under half $1 million of revenue per year. We expect significant uplift in sales as we conclude global distribution agreements, as more countries get visibility to BQT locking capabilities and the global partners add their marketing muscle to drive increased awareness and demand. With our scalability, this growth will not materially increase BQT OPEX requirements, and working capital needs will primarily be for increasing production capacity and inventory. Progress on the global agreements was disappointing in FY21, but not expected from the COVID-19 impacts and the significant restructuring by both companies during the year, but the activity and progress has picked up significantly in the past 2 months. Our partnership into power cables was initially tactical, and generated approximately over $1 million of revenue over the past 2 years. But our partner is now seeking to build on the initial technical success and their growing confidence in FFT's technology to move to a more strategic relationship. A strategic relationship would underpin their sales investment into a number of major new power cable programs in development, as well as growing retrofit programs on existing power cables and building on what they've achieved to date. There are a number of major international power corridors in final planning, and the revenue potential for FFT through our partner would be several times the current revenues for each of these new corridor programs. Outside of these new power corridors, there are thousands of kilometres of power cable that are a target market for upgrading with the optimised FFT solutions we've developed to meet some of their unique needs. For new applications, we'll add new partners, such as we've been doing with Aura IQ and the agreement recently signed with Strata Global and is being extended to other global providers. If we consider the 2,500 plus of FFT systems installed to date, and which is not including the additional 2,000 systems being installed as part of the Indian MOD program, in FY21 we initiated our multi-year comprehensive maintenance offering and closed three-year contracts that each generate up to $20,000 per system per year. And this builds on top of our baseline of annual support contracts generating a few hundred thousand dollars per year. So if FFT penetrates into only, say, 10% of the current install base with the new comprehensive contracts, it would achieve circa $5 million of annual recurring revenue. Typically, contracts are at least 3 years, but we have requests from some customers for support agreements extending up to 10 years. So during FY22, we're planning to increase the sales capacity around the comprehensive multi-year contracts and planning to significantly enhance the value of these agreements as we integrate machine learning and cyber assurance upgrades into the product. Moving to technology licensing, this will enable FFT to enter price-sensitive markets or complex projects that otherwise might not or would not be accessible to FFT. The benefits include extending the revenue contribution from legacy technologies, just as we've done with Indian MOD. We obtain exceptional margins. We have no cost of sales, no real working capital requirements, and much improved visibility to future revenue. I'm pleased that we're already in discussions for new licensing agreements, and as it involves a degree of technology transfer, we're also focused on IP protection. In the previous slide, I spoke about building blocks we've assembled for our smart city strategy, but each of these also address individual but significant markets, especially in transport and data protection. As we prove out our solution in successful deployments, we can leverage these reference sites and customers and deliver and grow through global partners that are strong and credible in these new markets. Finally, we'll continue the OpEx and cost discipline evident over the past 4 years. Moving to slide 21. At this early stage of FY22, we do not intend to provide guidance, but we can certainly provide colour on our trajectory. As I previously discussed, we saw growing activity, increased orders in the second half of last financial year, and especially in the fourth quarter, which was following suppressed activity in orders in the prior four quarters. We ended the financial year with four orders and 1.5 million of delayed contracts. The value of orders we received in the fourth quarter of last year was in fact double the same quarter on the prior financial year. We're seeing the higher rate of activity experienced in the fourth quarter continuing into the current quarter. The delayed contracts are progressing well. We've already have over half of the 1.5 million in delayed orders, and we expect the rest to be received this quarter and to be fulfilled in the first half, if not the first quarter. Sales receipts across fourth quarter FY2021 and to date in 1Q FY2022 at a run rate significantly up from the prior four quarters. In fact, order intake is around 50% compared to the prior four quarters and even higher for FFT alone. We also have a strong pipeline, sales pipeline, and even excluding the Aura IQ $50 million of three-year contracts, that we have in the sales pipeline for that program, the FFT sales pipeline alone is well over 70 million. Extrapolating this growth in sales momentum and the recent progress on the growth initiatives, as well as investments in sales capacity, including the recent appointment in the world's largest security market with Jim Viscardi as our new VP of the Americas, management are confident of further growth across FY22. Importantly, we're looking beyond FY22 with our growth initiatives, and we're starting this next growth phase very well set. We have global reach, high margins, an exceptional customer base, world-leading technologies, a proven management team, highly scalable manufacturing and operational expense base, efficient go-to-market models, strong working capital with lots of cash, no debt. In summary, we're extremely well positioned to fulfil on our mission of being a global leader in actionable, intelligent data streams that protect and optimise critical assets. On behalf of Lee and David, I'd like to thank you all for joining today's AVA Risk Group results call, and we'll now take any questions that have been posted. Thank you.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star two. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Aaron Muller from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
G'day, guys. How you going? Congratulations on a great result.
Thanks, Aaron.
Look, just a couple of questions from me. Look, firstly, just in terms of the outlook and growth initiatives, just keen to talk a little bit about the maintenance contracts. I mean, how many customers or sites are sort of contracted on those maintenance contracts at the moment? And I mean, do you think getting to sort of 10% of the 2,500 customers on those support contracts is realistic, and over what time frame?
Yeah, look, thanks, Aaron. So, look, at the moment, the contracts we have in place are not generally the multi-year ones. They tend to be shorter duration and not of the value that we've developed with the new product. So, as I mentioned in the presentation, we really only have a run rate of, you know, under $500,000 at the moment of general maintenance contracts. But we have seen the uptick in terms of the new product, as I call it, which is a multi-year comprehensive agreement, obviously is picking up, and that's where we see the value of the amount of revenue per year we can get from each system. Now, in terms of the rollout, we've put in place obviously a number of initiatives this year in terms of incentives, and we're adding some resources obviously to really make sure that it gets a focused sales attention, and obviously the value is well defined and articulated. One of the biggest install bases we have is in the US, and that's really the first major focus that we've got in the year ahead. And we've actually been building up that sales team in anticipation. The other good thing about the Americas is where we've got large install bases, it's in with customers, in government customers and agencies, where they have multiple sites. So we actually have some customers that actually have up to 30-odd systems in their deployments. And so they provide large opportunities of increasing the quantum very, very rapidly. Of course, that all goes all the way down to sites that have one system. So we've really got a focused target. We're really going to obviously grow it rather rapidly, but I'm not going to actually forecast where we'll end up in terms of the overall percentage of the systems. But the 10% is obviously fairly conservative because it's a pretty low hit rate in terms of what's being required. The value that we're going to add is really going to drive it too. I mean, you know, it's focused around hardware. Our reliability is second to none, and we're actually adding machine learning and other features that will make it extremely attractive and increase the revenue we can achieve per site.
Okay, great. Thanks, Rob. And just in terms of that that pipeline you mentioned for FFT of being well over 70 million, where is that predominantly? Is it in the US?
No, it's pretty well spread. You tend to have the larger projects through Middle East and even India, where there's some massive ones there. The US tends to actually have a very quick turnaround where the projects tend to be, in the order of, let's say, half a million thereabouts, but have a very high rotation rate, very quick close rate. It's the large monsters are actually across the Middle East and India.
Yeah, okay, great. And are they a reasonable, when you say large monsters, are they a reasonable percentage of that 70 million pipeline?
No, the very large ones actually are probably about 15 to 20% of the pipeline.
So sort of IMOD, the Indian Ministry of Defence contract size?
Yeah, large infrastructure rollouts along rail, et cetera, and along pipelines, correct.
Yeah, okay. And then just on BQT, I mean, it sounds like, the opportunity there with Dormakaba and Asser Abloy is quite significant, and it could become a much larger business over the next couple of years. Could you maybe just talk through those distribution partnerships and give us a sense of the opportunity there?
Oh, look, definitely. So BQT locks have got some really great solutions for particular commercial type building applications as well as high security. They've solved some problems that no one else has solved in terms of self-aligning locks. And even, those big players and ASSA have tried to develop locks to do what BQT have done in the past, and they can't. So there is a huge hole and a huge opportunity, obviously, with those companies to grow. There's also the global demand for roller locks in terms of transportation, distribution. So we are looking at large customer sets that have very large needs, and really the muscle and the capabilities of these large distributors are really key to the growth, one of the keys for the growth for BQT. It puts it into a different league altogether. So really we're pretty excited that the momentum's picking up after it being a bit slow the last year or so.
Okay, that's great. And is there a pipeline, sales pipeline for BQT that you can talk to, or?
Look, it's a quite different. With a distribution type of product, typically the COTS that they have for the locks, it's really a flow business run rate, so they have good visibility, and that actually is being quite stable, but we're looking at it scaling quite significantly. So when you sign up major distribution agreements, you get great visibility going forward as it starts scaling and growing. The reader business is a bit strongly focused on project type business at the first instance in terms of the readers. Then it becomes a run rate business in the supply of the access cards themselves, the encoding cards. They have a pipeline, but it's a completely different nature to the type of pipeline we have in FFT, which is very much on, a lot of project business. But obviously we're building towards that revenue from recurring revenue. They tend to have much more of a flow business already, but really we're looking at scaling it.
Yeah, okay, great. And then one final question, maybe for David, just on your balance sheet. I mean, you're going to have post the distribution back to shareholders probably about $20 million in cash. I mean, what are your thoughts on that in terms of what you might be looking to do? You talked about a buyback, but even after that, you'll have plenty of capital. Are acquisitions something you could reconsider?
Yeah, spot on, Aaron. We've kind of kept a little bit of money aside. The business, we as you've seen from our cash flow statement, we really manage our cash tightly, and so we're quite confident that we have a reasonable slush fund within that circa $20 million to pursue some acquisition opportunities. It's the sort of business that, with its size and the nature of its customers, that it's not the sort of company where I could see the business doing two, three, four, five, six acquisitions to kind of build it up over the next 12, 18 months, 2 years, but certainly doing one or two high value acquisitions that would not only add to the product portfolio but also to the profits of the business. So in that sense, we've kept some back for that purpose, and we've also kept some back for I guess, opportunistic recurring revenue strategies that we're looking to deploy in both ORIQ and another adjacency, which we're working with a large partner on now. And that's more about monetizing that capital into a recurring revenue stream.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys. That's it from me.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Stella Wang, private investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thanks a lot for a great result and the capital management announcement. Got a couple of questions, if I may. Firstly, related to the India MOD contract. When you guys talked about similar style licensing contract in pipeline, are you comfortable to talk to the average size of those licensing type deals and what industry? Is that included in that 70 million pipeline for FFT?
Yeah, look, the sales pipeline doesn't include these new licensing deals that we're working on. The dimensions of them will be slightly different to the Indian MOD in that they'll be long-term, that they'll create actually a flow business that will actually run for many, many years because it'll be actually to fulfill a general market demand within markets which are maybe price sensitive. The Indian MOD was very much a project one, but I do note that it actually has got additional revenues in additional years as part of the annual maintenance agreement. So there's about 7 years after warranty where we will receive revenue for that. And even the Indian MOD actually has a number of potential extensions that are being discussed as we speak. So I'm not trying to make it too confusing. No, we've looked at other regions and looking at licensing to access a number of countries and regions that we might not otherwise as a long-term strategy to access those particular regions. And we'll implement it wherever it needs to be to actually access large projects. And some of the things that come to play are duties and also made-in type rules that governments set up. And we're obviously able to use this go-to-market effectively to actually access those particular opportunities. So it really is part of a range of go-to-market options and opportunities that we have that we can use and that we really want to implement. And the visibility it gets is obviously one of the key benefits, apart from the growth that we achieve and accessing markets that we wouldn't otherwise.
That's great color. Thanks a lot. So when does that 3-year warranty finish and the 7-year potential sales of spare start?
Sure. So a reasonable percentage of the systems for the Indian MOD have been obviously manufactured, are in the process of being deployed. So that means in 3 years from towards the end of last year, those systems will start coming out of warranty. So that will be the period that we'll start seeing the annual maintenance contract revenue kick in. So it'll be a bit of a hiatus for another 2 to 3 years and then it will kick back in.
Great. Now switching to ORIQ, the SaaS style sales model, you previously talked about 50-50 split between capital sales and recurring revenue for that 50 million opportunity. Is that still the case? It's just that when you guys talked about keeping cash to fund that SaaS sales model, it sounds like we're now going to upfront fund all the capital sales, and therefore the 50 million, should that all be recurring type then?
Look, a really good question. And obviously the model that we actually have, or the offers, we put both the CapEx and OpEx. We obviously want the OpEx. And there's really a crossover point at about the 3 years in terms of what it means for us, I guess. But really, we wanted to be flexible, but we also wanted to move very quickly to the SaaS model. It's hard to predict exactly how all the customers are going to move forward, and therefore, we've been trying to be honest about, the range that we might see. So if that 50 million or 3 year opportunities that we've got at the moment, if it was all OPEX, obviously it'd be 16, 70 million of recurring revenue. Not that they'll all happen at the one time, but certainly that would be the sort of revenue run rate you could see from it. If it was all what we call the CapEx OpEx, then in fact there'd be a further upfront sale, and the amount of recurring revenue is still going to be there because we license back the data, but it's at a lower quantum and typically around half that run rate. Now, what we don't know is exactly what the mix will be, and therefore it's prudent that we actually have working capital to fund it until we can see these ones closing and ramping up and, you know, can forecast more accurately. And we still are going through proof of values. They're going very, very well with successful outcomes. But we just want to make sure that we're well capitalised, at least in the early phases, as this thing settles and we get good visibility where it's actually landing and what percentage are CapEx and what percentage are OpEx.
That sounds very sensible. Now, last question from me. We've looked forward a lot. It's looking really fantastic. Can we just wind a little back in time? Now, looking at the two financial years pre-COVID, apart from the fantastic Indian contract, Future Fiber and BQT did not seem to grow much. So I just want to dig a little bit into what's behind that trend. Was that because we are in a product development phase and the new generation of technology was not ready at that stage, or was that because the end market, the end customers were in a low CapEx cycle?
No, a good question. So if you looked at BQT, what you'll see is the work they did in terms of the OpEx management and consolidation, and you'll see that, you know, really 2 years ago, they on a similar revenue base, they went from loss to profit. So they were very much focused upon, you know, their operating leverage work, and a lot of work went on to getting that cost base optimised. And obviously they're in a good position now to support all of the growth initiatives. And yep, they did grow certainly last year, and they had a good Department of Defence contract that greatly assisted. So really BQT about just getting ready for growth, getting that OpEx base right and the scalability right. From an FFT perspective, yes, you're quite right. There was work going on regarding our Aura IQ platform. And the Aura IQ platform was an investment that we've done that's really driving future growth. You know, we've had tremendous success in terms of the performance of the system. And, you know, I guess the COVID-19 situation did impact the growth that we would normally have expected. But as we've mentioned in the presentation, in the last quarter of the last financial year, It was well above prior year run rates and was a great jump up, and we're seeing that continue. So therefore, as we're moving out of COVID-19 impacts and difficulty in getting to sites, and we're seeing our regions picking up and getting back to business, particularly the US and the Americas, we're just seeing the growth that we would have expected last year from that Aura platform to start kicking in.
Great. Can I just squeeze one last one, just promise one last one? Any factory production that has to close due to COVID restriction at the moment? And are you guys open to pass on the extra component cost to customers? That's all from me.
We're able to keep all of our operations going. Obviously, there's from a production perspective, no, we maintain our current production capability. We're an essential service because we do security products. Obviously, we managed very carefully the whole COVID-19 situation, and which kept minimum staff required at the production facilities. We did have to work through more shortages because of logistics issues. We haven't really felt much cost increase, and we make very, very high margins anyway, as you're aware. So therefore, a cost increase really doesn't have unless it was a major one, but certainly small ones have very minimal impact on our particular business. I think more our concern was about availability, but we've managed that particularly well and very confident going forward.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from John Vine, private investor. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much for the presentation this morning, and well done on the past year. And I really like your focus on recurring revenue. I was just interested to understand what the nature of our inquiry with the tax office is. What are you seeking from the tax office? Is it a mix of capital and dividend? Or if you could just shed some light on that, please.
No, so when you do a capital return, you need to get a class ruling. Essentially, you apply for it from the tax office and then they determine they agree that it's a capital return and you can return it to shareholders without the tax implications of, say, a dividend. So you're basically putting in an application. What tends to happen in practice with these class rulings is they'll give it to you in draft and then you get your shareholder approval. And then once you've got your shareholder approval, they'll formalise it. It's a very important thing, obviously, from an Australian taxation perspective to have that in place before the company sends out the capital.
Right. So the capital returns a more efficient way of distributing funds than through a dividend in this situation.
Yes. Well, we believe it's capital in nature because it was from a divestment of a operating subsidiary that we held for many years within the group from its start, really. We believe it's capital, and we've spoken to our advisors about that, and they've analysed it, and they're going to put in an application on that basis. The tax department do this because of Part 4A, the anti-avoidance provisions in the Tax Act. So basically, they want to make sure that companies that make big profits out of operating income aren't necessarily just returning them as capital. They've got to return them as dividends. We successfully paid more than $7 million in dividends in the last financial year. So we obviously have a small but the track record of paying out profits in dividends as well. So we've really got to go through that process, and we are, we are somewhat in the hands of the ATO for that, but are told by our advisors that they believe that the class ruling will be accepted.
Okay, thanks very much for that.
Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Carl Hanich from Flinders Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the presentation. I really like your capital management initiatives, given that you haven't got any franking credits there. So that looks like an optimal sort of strategy. I've just got a few questions. I mean, some of them sort of been touched on by a previous caller. But the first one is the services division is divested, I think, on the 16th of August. So will there be, say, 6 weeks of contribution of revenue and EBITDA for the services division for FY22?
Yes, the services division will continue to contribute to our EBITDA until completion occurs. And
late October?
Well, when completion occurs. We've got a sunset date of late October. It may occur sooner than that because really it comes down to the transfer process in Dubai, the company ownership. And so that's a bit of a paper pushing process where, you need things certified, sent to embassies, sent via DFAT, and then the authorities in Dubai at the free zone that the company's registered in have to then register that transfer. And once that transfer is registered, then that deal and the money is paid. Then that's when completion occurs. So, to be honest, that could be in 8 days or it could be in 8 weeks.
Okay. So, well, then the question obviously is, how is the service division going in the first couple of months of the year?
Yeah, so the services division is still tracking nicely we're still confident that it will continue to track nicely under our ownership. We're not providing any forecasts in respect of any of the businesses at this given point in time.
Okay, but compared to last year, it's tracking quite well compared to the same
period. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, now on the Aurora IQ, you mentioned $50 million over 3 years in the pipeline, and also you sort of touched on this in the previous caller. If I'm trying to pencil in sort of a number, if I'm assuming, say, 50% of that converts into actual revenue in that pipeline, and it's over 3 years, and because you haven't converted it yet, so I'm assuming half a year. So based on those assumptions, if I'm penciling in $4 million for revenue for Aurora IQ, Would that sort of be a realistic sort of number?
I'm not sure exactly.
I'm getting 50 million divided by 3 and then divided by 50% because it's a 50% conversion rate. And then if you've only got half a year because we're already into FY22, you may only sort of on average convert these half a year. So that's what I'm saying, it's about 4 million if you do all that, given that it's still early on. Is that sort of right?
Look, I think we need to be careful about the close rate on that 50 million in terms of the pace at which it will close. Again, not forecasting, but you know, that 50 million is made up of, let's say, close to 50 different mines. It's made up of, within that you've got sites, let's say, and then within that you've actually got around 80 different conveyor sets. And so therefore they're all targets, they're all well qualified, and they're all well known, and they're all on the program. But the rate at which that they would be progressing, I think to close half of that within a financial year, in all honesty, is probably a bit aggressive. I think it'll get into a couple of years for us to work through a program like that. But it is all active. It's not changing. It's actually targets that are well known.
Okay. So and I'm given the COVID ID headwind as well.
That's really been a big impact last year in terms of doing these proof of value trials. We have to get to site, and these sites are often in remote locations overseas, and it's been a real challenge, obviously, progressing that. You know, we felt it in our normal security business, the slowdown, which it's all picking up again, but some of the countries in which some of these mines are still going to be a little bit of a challenge in terms of site access. I think, but we are progressing, don't get me wrong, but yeah, just the ability to close out is being, and actually, you know, get to sites and do our trials is going to be an ongoing piece of work that we'll work through, yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned 50 million for 3 years for Aurora IQ. For FFT, you had a 70 million number there for the pipeline. Is that also over a 3-year period?
Look, the sales pipeline is actually over a few years, and again, you need to understand the reality of the why you want a large pipeline is that you've actually got projects that actually will move in time and space, and therefore nothing is static or stable. So as with any sales funnel, yes, obviously you put in qualified opportunities, but we don't always control those opportunities. It's the dimension of that that gives us confidence in terms of our ability to, obviously, a high quantum will close. But again, to extrapolate a single number into a time frame, which is what you want to do, we're not forecasting at this stage. We'll provide updates as we get into this financial year, I expect. But right at the moment, we're really showing the strength and dimensions of what we're working with, and obviously our confidence in growth this year, but not putting the quantum on it quite yet.
Okay, well, fair enough. But for the first couple of months, you are tracking for FFT at above PCP, as above the July, August.
Oh, very much so.
Month.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely true.
But I'm given the COVID ID headwinds, there's a chance that, you know, may not make or may not get well above the 25 million for FY21. Come along.
Well, I actually see that the growth rate is actually supporting growth, and we said that very clearly, that we actually are confident of growth over last year.
Okay. Yep. Even with the COVID ID headwinds, you can still run.
Yeah, actually, we've seen for certain key markets that it's actually really picked up. We saw it slightly in the third quarter of last financial year. It was a bit of a pickup from the prior ones. And then, yeah, the last quarter of last financial year was a great one in terms of the order load coming in. And this quarter to date, it's at the same pace. And as I said, the last quarter of last financial year was double the comparable financial quarter, and well above any quarter we saw in the previous 2 years at least when I was looking at it. So, and just the general confidence of the sales team, and the strengthening that we're doing, and you know, I can, it's actually very, very positive for both companies in the technology group. The major part of COVID-19 is well behind us, and it's just impacting some of the newer programs.
Okay, well, okay, my only comment was going to be that if the fourth quarter was so great, and it was double, you know, the fourth quarter of FY20, then it may just be hard to beat that again this coming year.
No, but if I don't believe so.
Well, then that's good.
I'm sorry, I don't believe so at all. No, I'm quite confident we'll beat it during this year.
Okay, that's fantastic. Well, thank you for taking my questions.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Broomfield for closing remarks.
Look, again, I would like to thank everyone for participating in the call. It's been obviously a pleasure to be able to present the results from last year. You know, I'd certainly also want to recognise management from technology and services, and particularly the great work done by the services team and Chris Fergus in terms of getting towards that, the stage of divestment that we've got at the moment, and obviously the ongoing focus for the year ahead. We're building on a great base, and I think the overall strategy is very, very solid and well supported with the initiatives that we've had underway. So thanks again for the participation by everybody.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.